Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes,
oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get a feeling you've been cheated.
It is someday in either February or March. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live-ish in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what day it is. I'm not even 100% sure what month it is. Could be March. Could be February. Probably March. So what am I doing here? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not here. We have pre-recorded this intro.
It is March 8th.
Birth of my...
Here we go.
Talk about
and
problems.
Because you're hearing
wow,
it means that I am
already begun.
On paternity leave. How long will it be? Probably not that long. I may take a little more time later, but for the next day or two or three or four, maybe five, depending on which day you're listening to this, we will have a series of either guest hosts or pre-recorded interviews that we've done or archive shows. And in just a moment, you will hear the dulcet tones of Matt and Michael, the Majority Report producers, who will explain whether it's a guest host or some archived interviews from the first Majority Report or from this version of the Majority Report or interviews that I pre-recorded over the past couple of weeks or interviews done by some of my friends. Not to say that Michael and Matt aren't my friends. I'm friendly with them. But let's not get carried away. So I leave it now to Matt and Michael to give you the information. They'll tell you what the date is. They'll tell you what the status is of the birth of my second child. And they'll let you know what to expect on today's program. So see you soon.
It is Friday, March 8th. I'm Michael Brooks.
I'm Matt Binder, and it's not just Friday. It is casual Friday.
It is a traditional casual Friday, minus our cordial acquaintance, Sam Cedar.
Cordial acquaintance is very good.
Cordial acquaintance. I would obviously not friends.
Call him our friend, yes.
No, I would never do such a thing.
God forbid.
God forbid. Does the baby have a name yet?
Baby does not have a name yet, as far as I know.
Wow. So the baby name saga continues. Still up in the air, so recommendations, suggestions, still welcomed.
Certainly.
I'm pushing for Sigmund.
Sigmund.
I actually kind of like Sigmund.
Well,
in a sort of joke sort of
way. I think Cliff Cedar would be great.
I think Cliff Cedar would be great, too. And, folks, you know, some things need to stay constant in the midst of a changing world. So unless Mrs. Cliff Schechter has gone into labor sometime over the past couple of minutes, we will be joined by Cliff Schechter to go over the week's news in just a moment.
Oh.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That was another goal of mine, to get a little Jay-Z on this show. And now I am joined by Cliff Schechter. But first, in another tradition that we will be honoring, we need to play Cliff Schechter's theme song by Jimmy Reefer Cake. Please go ahead.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Cliff, how you doing? Are you there?
I'm here. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I think we're holding up pretty well.
Holding up the fort while Sammy's out with the new one?
I think we're trying to. How do you think we're doing, Matt?
I think you guys rock.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Before we get started on the serious stuff, though, I want to get my entry in for baby name. I think I have been thinking about this long and hard. I want to go with Cassius Clay Cedar.
Ooh. I like that.
You like that? I think, I don't know. It just sort of came to me.
It also opens the door for Sam's new baby to convert to Islam at some point, which I would like.
Yes. I would like it just to see reactions on the right.
Yeah. They usually see, this is what happens.
They'd have to decide what they thought was worse, being Jewish or Muslim.
I think in today's age, I think it's Muslim.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's a little bit of a sad thing. I like that, my people used to be on the receiving end of all the hatred.
No,
I
mean, we used
like
to be the standouts.
Like, let's say, Germany circa 1943, but, you know, more recently here, just that these guys would freak out with all sorts of conspiracy theories. But it seems that we're passé now.
If Jews want hate, I think YouTube is the place to go.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you're ever in fear of dying anti-Semitism, just check out any YouTube comment thread.
It's still well out there. I'm talking more the Republican Party establishment, being that the Bill Kristols of the world have and Charles Krauthammers have joined that establishment. Jonah Goldberg, with his brilliant theses on fascism that he obviously researched heavily. that's the problem, is that too many of us have joined the bad guys. And so now here we are. Now we can't be demonized by the Republican establishment anymore, or they'll be attacking their own people.
I know. We're like, listen, guys, enough of us have become greedy troglodytes. You can't paint us all with the same brush anymore.
That is exactly right. And it's a shame. It's a shame.
It is a shame. I'm half, you know, Cliff. So on one half of my family's Jewish, the other half is actually German and Irish. And the,
nice
and
combo.
The Jewish half is German. So that's a kind of weird history I hold there.
Where I'm almost, I think I'm three quarters, if I'm correct, German Jew. So we hate ourselves, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
No,
we hate ourselves.
I kid, of course. But I was not brought up in the religious tradition. So I sometimes feel even a little bit like I'm not being honest claiming Judaism, because I've not been what you would call anything close to the religious sort. You know, I'm a pork fried rice on Yom Kippur kind of guy, and then I forget that day is actually Yom Kippur. So,
wow, that's,
and that's not to disparage it. I'm a fan of those who like to keep the holidays holy. I have no problem with that. That's just not the way I was raised. So,
well, for me, it was only pork on Christmas, actually.
Pork on Christmas is good. Jesus
yeah,
would have approved,
Christmas
I think.
It's good stuff. And again, before we move into – actually, this is a good transition because I want to talk about Rand Paul. But I would just say
he's definitely a
if you ever
want to
be reminded
kind
of your Jewish identity, just in fact insult the Pauls during this interview. We will put that on YouTube and you will be called a Zionist Jew something or other.
Yeah, that's true. That part of the Republican Party can still get worked up. Well, let's call it the white supremacist wing. Or the Paul Brown wing works well, too. And so I will do my best to insult Rand Paul and that squirrel that lives on his head pretty consistently.
It's already
and
done.
And hopefully some people will freak out about that and come and call me names.
Jew Cliff Schechter insults Rand Paul's hair. All right, let's
– they can show up again and be like, Sam Cedar, we're not anti-Semitic, you Jew-looking guy. I was a big fan of that. I thought that was a very effective argument by them.
No, that was a classic. So actually, I do want to kind of get into this, and I think that we, you know, there's a couple of different ways to go at the Rand Paul filibuster. But before we kind of get into the specifics, I want to just know, I think people have had very different reactions to it. And I'm really curious your just sort of broad kind of aerial takeaway. What do you think about this? What's your impression of what he did and what he's trying to do?
Did you work aerial in there purposely because it's a drone thing? Or was that completely accidental?
You know what? You called me out.
He's been working on that all morning.
That's not true, actually. I was working on getting Jay-Z in the transition music all morning. So that was way – it was even less responsible than that.
Yeah. Well done, by the way. I you know, as I try to bring often when I talk about this stuff, and I think I do – I try my best anyhow that I bring nuance. Granted, it's angry usually and sarcastic nuance, but – I try to bring nuance in that, you know, you get these people that are so absolutist on one end or the other quite often. And I find this is another one of those things. You either have to be with Paul or against Paul. I certainly would never have signed up anything and put up the hashtag I stand with Paul because I think he's a terrible human being. Quite frankly, I think he's terrible for what he said about Hillary Clinton over Benghazi, for the disrespect that he showed the Secretary of State, who knows so much more about foreign policy and her pinky than he will ever know in his entire life. I think he's terrible for the fact that he's a hypocrite who likes to decry and scream about government spending, but then you find out that, you know, he's taking Medicare for his medical practice. Why? Because, quote, doctors have the right to make a good living too. You don't, by the way, if you're homeless and you need food stamps or whatever it might be, then you don't. You should just starve and die, and that's not the government's responsibility. It is, however, the government's responsibility to make sure doctors like him have a nice living. And his libertarianism is not libertarianism. You know, Gary Johnson is a guy I can respect as a libertarian, even if I disagree with.
Right.
Rand Paul is a very different beast. The Paul family are. They're what I like to call neo-Confederate isolationists. You know, it's a couple of old and ugly strains in the Republican Party that get them to where they are. It's based on, you know, they don't want the federal government to ban abortion or gay rights, but they're very comfortable that they support states. His father, Ron Paul, supported the state of Texas banning sodomy. They're all for the state taking away your rights. And to me, who the hell cares who it is who's taking your rights away if they're being taken away? How's that libertarianism? I don't really understand that. So to me, if in Rand Paul's world, people can say, you can't eat this lunch counter with me because you're black, or I believe in a personhood amendment, so I'm going to take away your rights to reproductive justice, you woman, or I'm going to take your rights away to love who you want, you gay person, or whatever it might be. Why would I stand with him? It doesn't mean I won't support him on this particular issue if I agree with him, but certainly I'd never put "I stand with Rand" next to my name. Now, granted, others feel differently, and I'm not going to attack them over that. You know, they can – if they feel like this is an issue where they feel strongly enough about it, they want to put that – that's okay. I'm not going to insult them, but I would never do it. I will, however, say that I think there needs to be a process. Where I also find a little bit of nuance for people on the left is sort of drones have become this be-all – you know, we hate drones, and I don't really understand what the difference is if it's a drone or it's a cruise missile or it's a bomber that's dropping something on you. To me, they're all, you know, the issue is not drones. The issue is what the right of the executive has. And we haven't laid that out in any good way, and there's no doubt in my mind that President Obama has gone way past what I think is acceptable, just as his predecessor did. In declaring, you know, what state secrets are, and not rolling back from the program of illegal wiretapping, and a number of variety, not closing Guantanamo, or at least fighting for it rhetorically and fighting for it in terms of America's values. So I would be critical of President Obama there, but I don't think that's why Rand Paul is doing it. I could be wrong. I think he's doing it politically. He wants to be president. He admitted as much. We all know as much. So it doesn't mean, again, that I wouldn't sit there and support what Rand Paul was saying, if I think it's right. You always find, on certain issues, I've found common cause with neoconservatives. On certain issues, I've found cause with traditional conservatives. And I would do the same with Rand Paul on this particular issue and on the legalization of pot and a couple of other things. I wouldn't necessarily sit there and smoke through Aqua Buddha with him.
I think
I might. I wouldn't. I don't think so. I you know. it being illegal and all.
Could
I
you
can't
smoke
do that.
Aqua Buddha, or you know that, or maybe you'd have to vaporize Aqua Buddha.
But again, I guess what I'm trying to say in my own way is, I think to say I'm with Rand Paul or I'm against him even on this issue isn't enough nuance on it. I think again we need a policy, and I think this is a difficult area. It's easy to demagogue, but I think you know if you find out Osama bin Laden and his and people like him are somewhere planning an attack against the United States. Well, that's an act of war, and you need to be able to go after them. At the same
yeah,
time,
no, I think there are some essential kind of distinctions, and I just to sort of run off a few points here, actually, because you brought up a lot there. I think one is that, and you're saying actually exactly just parenthetically what Matt said yesterday, which is totally true, which is that you know if the state of Alabama reinstituted segregation and wanted to use drones to help enforce that, the Pauls would be all for that. And I think that that's totally true. And that's a very well taken point.
And it's a great point.
I think on top of that, though, you know, there are some things about the drone program that he did mention, which I think are intrinsically problematic. Like, as an example, signature strikes, which are based off of behavioral patterning. And when you get into behavioral patterning, which, I mean, you know, granted, you're going to get some people you want to get through behavioral patterning, but you're basically excluding out even a possibility of measuring civilian casualties because you're basically just saying, hey, look, if you're in an age group and you're in this area, we're going to get at you. And there are some – so I think there are some things that are really intrinsically problematic about the issue in that way. But what frustrated me, and I want – and I'm interested in you commenting on, is I think, there's a wide way to look at the drone issue, and it is complex and it is easy to demagogue, but I think it's really clear that they're being overused and over relied on. They have killed a fair amount of civilians. They're not being used strategically, and there are these kill lists and all the rest. But he spent most of his time up there talking about this like bizarre hypothetical about dropping a drone on Jane Fonda on a cafe in Chicago.
Right.
It seemed totally bizarre and actually I want to speak directly to your point about him being interested in running for president, because the people who are really on the receiving end of this, besides Alaki's son, which he brought up, that was important, but the real kind of long-term problem with this and short-term problem with this is civilian casualties in places like Pakistan and Yemen. And he's talking about using it in the United States, which, you know, triggers for me this idea of Obama being like some, you know, communist czar or something.
That's exactly right. I mean, he's playing into conspiracy.
Yeah.
And that's what's important here, which is if you work on the stuff I work on, as you know, I work on the gun issue.
Right.
And he takes such an extreme conspiratorial absolutist, black helicopters are going to come in and get you, the government's going to knock down your door to take your guns. That's what inspires people like Poplawski in Pittsburgh to shoot three police officers because he's a little bit mentally off when people – and they're coming to arrest him because he's fighting with his mother, right? And they're coming to get him, and it turns out that he thinks that it's Obama sending people to take his guns. So he shoots and murders three police officers.
Oh,
that's what – this is the stuff of the NRA where they make things up and act like the government's coming to take all your guns away, and it leads to people – innocent people getting killed. He's allied with militia segments, with white supremacist segments, with domestic terrorists, and with all these people that the NRA is appealing to in their base communications. And I've seen these communications. I've seen the emails he sent out. Background checks are going to lead to gun registration and things that are not true. So when I see that he's willing to engage in that and send out an email like that, when I see he's willing to attack Hillary Clinton on Benghazi conspiracies about Syria and Iran and things that no one's proven and aren't true,
weapons,
how can I trust him
Turkey.
On this? Right? How can I trust him on what he's saying about this? And so, again, it doesn't mean – and I want to be very clear, because it doesn't mean I don't have a problem with the drone program. I do. I have a problem with murdering innocent people. I have a problem with people who are unaccountable being able to make decisions, whether it's drone or cruise missile, whatever it might be, and some innocent civilians are getting killed. That is a real problem, as you've pointed out, all right, which is what's going on in Yemen and what's going on in Afghanistan. We need a process for that.
Right.
And I can't claim that I'm a complete expert on that, but we do. Whether it's the equivalent of a FISA court that reviews what's going on, or it's members, I would say the Senate or House Intelligence Committee, but, House
Michelle
Intelligence
Bachman's
Committee.
On that,
Michelle
so.
Bachman's, right. When Michelle Bachman's on the House Intelligence Committee, it's really lost all utility for even existing.
Right.
So There needs to be – we cannot have law when we want a democracy where one man can do things free of accountability. That leads to a dangerous situation. But as for, he's going to attack a cafe in Chicago tomorrow, well, that's just stupid.
Right.
And that's not what the issue is.
Right.
And so, again, it's Rand Paul being Rand Paul. So I think we can separate out the two things, at least from my perspective, and I don't have to say, I stand with Rand and every hideous thing he stands for, without saying, I've got a real problem with the drone program. We need to be able to stop people who are planning attacks on the United States, or frankly on U.S. soldiers abroad, or frankly on all sorts of things in that realm. But at the same time, we need to have a process.
Right.
We need to have people that are accountable for their actions, and we need to make sure that civilians who are just some guy playing a video game with a joystick, that civilians don't just become little dots on a map that we just kill and don't think twice about it. That's murder still. If you're not taking people's lives seriously, terrible things happen in war. That doesn't mean you don't try to prevent them with every ounce of your being.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's clear why, to me at least, why he brings up the hypothetical of, dropping a drone strike in a cafe in Chicago. I mean, obviously the Chicago reference was because they were hitting back Dick Durbin at that moment. But, with the reference in general of a drone strike here at a cafe or something that feels normal to an American citizen. I mean, they're clearly, to me, trying to bring the right wing world into their mindset, because, that world does not really care about a drone strike in Pakistan.
Right.
But, yeah, right. That's exactly. I mean, we have to stay with what the issues are here. And again, Rand Paul, like Marco Rubio, hey, I'm not a scientist. I mean, these guys are comical.
Right.
They're not serious people. They're not people I'll take seriously on things. It doesn't mean that if Rand Paul's standing up against drones, if they're allies to be had on issues, and if we need more accountability on that subject, that I don't think that we should ally with them. But we should always be wary of who they are, and that they're not coming from the same place we're coming from. They're coming from a conspiratorial right-wing John Birch society type place, a states' rights place, which is a term that's been used for all sorts of evil in this country. It's not libertarian. They can call themselves libertarians all they want. Libertarians don't favor personhood amendments, and libertarians don't favor the right of your government, whether it's your state, local, or federal government, to come in and say you can only have sexual relations with this person or that person. You can only drink water from the water fountain with this person or that person. They would be completely fine with an autocratic state as long as it's your state government doing it. How the hell is that libertarianism?
No, absolutely. No, I think they have some really, really ugly politics. And I guess the last question I have about this, which I really want your insight on, is I think what's really potentially problematic about this, though, is that as that space – so, Ron Wyden, just objectively, he's probably the smartest, most kind of consistent and thoughtful guy about these issues in the Senate. And he's been very critical and very thoughtful and very engaged on the issue. But the high-profile people on these issues, because they've been seated and because of what the administration has chosen to pursue, are people like Rand Paul. Ron Paul ran for president, he would go on college campuses and kind of have an anti-war message and this sort of thing. And it was appealing to younger people. And then what kind of gets swept in along with that is all this unbelievably toxic, conspiratorial, and bizarre politics along with it. So what's the danger for the kind of younger demographic that these guys are talking to, and how it's skewing the whole field of play, that they're the people who are most primarily identified with these issues that are important, and I think a lot of, particularly younger people are going to be really engaged with?
I think you're exactly right, and that is a danger, and a real one, and it's a danger politically and policy-wise, frankly. I mean, we're talking about politically, yeah, Rand Paul gets himself identified with, as Ron Paul became identified with certain issues, and all these people that I knew that at one point were – not a lot, but I knew some people that were progressive that suddenly were big Ron Paul supporters, not realizing what came along with the baggage there. And, it's the same thing here, that this is clearly for Rand Paul, he sees the political upside. He's honest about it. That they're not appealing to people in New England and the northern, the Great Lakes states and parts of the West. And the way to do that, of course, is to put out this faux libertarianism, like you're really a libertarian, although you're not. You can still keep your southern base of support because you're talking states' rights and you're saying to them, wink, wink, we won't let the federal government ban your right to love who you want or your right to reproductive justice, but we'll let you guys do it. But then you get to go out and seem like you're cool because you favor legalizing pot, you know, and you're against drones and the rest. And you maybe, you know, maybe you convince some people in some of these other states to support you because they don't realize the other aspects of your noxious policies. And so that's the political side of it. The policy side of it is, look, the Rand Paul was a big opponent of all the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And suddenly he shut up about all of that, you may remember, during his Senate race when it became important for him to win.
And supported settlements in the West Bank. I mean, he's making his moves.
That's right. So to think he's not going to throw overboard whatever he uses to get elected the minute he gets there, you know, and again, this is not to say that President Obama hasn't done some of the same, but politics is a judgment call. Sam and I, and you guys, too, have been very critical at times of President Obama, but we felt like in the end of the day, because I believe I can see nuance, I have to make a decision based upon all of my values and all the very many various forms of liberty that I believe in that include women and gays and African Americans and Hispanics and everyone else. I have to decide what I think is better overall. And I decided that was President Obama, even though I disagree with him on a number of things, and I don't think I've been very quiet about being critical of him.
Oh, definitely. I'm probably the biggest Obama bot in the Majority Report staff. So I would tend to agree with you. But
you're
if you
want to
choke on bong resin and re-legalize child sweatshop labor in the United States, vote for Rand Paul. But if you have other concerns – you should probably look elsewhere.
I think that's actually – I mean, I think you should look at maybe being a speechwriter. I think you crafted that quite well. I like the slogan there. Do you want bong resin and little kids knitting your clothes?
Yeah.
Come here to Rand Paul.
Right.
They also knit my hair.
Would you? Okay, right. They also knit your hair. Would you like your munchies served to you by a 9-year-old working for a penny an hour at the local Cumberland Farms? Vote for Rand Paul.
Right. Hey, do you want the liberty of having no minimum wage? Vote Rand Paul. I mean, seriously, like, right. If you start analyzing all the guy's positions on so many issues, it's like, come on. Do you think unions should be completely eliminated? Vote right. Rand Paul.
No,
the
it's
freedom
crazy.
To work for no money. Vote Rand Paul.
Yeah, so we're gonna move. So I want to shift gears a little bit because while Rand Paul was doing this right around that time. President Obama had dinner with a bunch of GOP lawmakers, you know, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, I think Bob Corker was there, a bunch of other people that I don't even know about.
That's what I call an awesome Saturday night, by the way.
Well, the food sounded good. They were at a really nice hotel. Now, I just want to kind of comment briefly on this because it does
And the White
seem,
House picked
I mean,
up a check, let's be clear.
President Obama picked up the check.
$85 per person. Which is very expensive when you're a bunch of Republican multimillionaires who've enriched yourself through your current office. So you better
I mean,
make
it
sure
really
the
actually
it
was like a dinner where a bunch of guys were eating almost literally filet mignon and talking about cutting Medicaid. But I just want to say, I mean, is this concerning to you that this kind of conversation is restarting again? And do you see – is this the kind of path to more cuts? And then I guess coupled with that, we have new unemployment numbers that came out today. And, you know, it's looking pretty decent. I mean, the recovery is anemic, but we're certainly doing better than Europe, obviously. And that's due in no small part to the fact that we did at least have some stimulus.
Right.
So what's going on here? And, you know, what do you think in terms of the danger of these negotiations and the new employment numbers?
Well, I'm just glad that we were proven yet again by these employment numbers how smart Republicans are when it comes to the economy. All those job-killing tax – you know, raising taxes, kind of like in the 90s with Bill Clinton. See, Clinton, Obama, Bush – which one's different than the other ones in terms of economic crashes? I'll leave that to everyone to figure it out. Because obviously all you need is to cut taxes on rich people and deregulate, and that leads to prosperity. Look, the new jobs numbers prove you're right. And had there been more stimulus, had President Obama fought for more, which we've gone through ad nauseum, we'd be in even better shape right now. But yes, we are going to recover. Economies are cyclical. They can be affected. Certainly, you know, growth and prosperity as well as an economy shrinking can be elongated and worsened as well as improved by what you do with fiscal and monetary policy. But, you know, to a certain degree, at least from my understanding of my economics classes, obviously, you know, economics are cyclical and the economy will improve. My guess is the sequestration might hurt it to a certain degree, but it'll improve as it's improving. And when it comes to getting together with all these guys, you know, I feel like I did back in 2008 when I said, if you want to get together with these guys for the optics, kind of like George Bush standing up with all these Texas Democrats saying, look, I'm bipartisan, and then really not being bipartisan at all.
Right.
You know, if he wants to do that, and frankly, if he wants to reach out with some guys, I don't believe that you shouldn't make deals. You should. You just, when you come from a position of strength, you come from a position of strength. You need to get more of what you want than what they get, like the vast majority. And when you are the guy who just won an election overwhelmingly, there need to be certain things that are off the table. And when you know that certain things are key platforms and planks of your party and have been for almost 100 years now, and those particular items are very important to people, not statistically, but individual people every day as to whether they eat and get the prescription drugs they need, those things also need to be off the table. Because shared sacrifice isn't shared. When the difference is that it's going to cost you a little bit more money to run your own jet versus somebody else not being able to eat for 2 days, that's not shared sacrifice.
Right.
And that's my problem with all of this. It's not to say that there aren't deals to be made, and it's not to say that there aren't things that can't be agreed upon. There can be. You know, this is why I said when President Obama agreed to having the top tax rates not go up above $250,000 but $400,000, I thought in the grand scheme of things that was a deal worth making if it gets you what you want. My problem usually is that we don't get enough of what we want.
Right.
So I'm not against dealing. I am, however, against taking 1 cent out of Social Security and away from actual Medicare benefits. I have no problem with cutting Medicare costs if it's done right. For example, bulk negotiation of drugs. Yeah, let's do that. And cut the cost of Medicare for the government. That'd be just fine. Let's not take anything away from individuals. Hell, let's lower the Medicare age. It'll make things more efficient. It'll make healthcare more efficient. It'll make Medicare more efficient. It works. It's a benefit to both programs. You're taking the people out who are the oldest away from our private healthcare system, and you're adding people who are the youngest to the Medicare system. Win-win.
Absolutely.
And then you're the same thing with Social Security. Pretty simple. Eliminate the cap. Raise the cap on the payroll tax. Done. Right? I mean, there are simple fixes to these things. Now, again, if you want to cut the cost of some of these programs through smart programs like reimportation of drugs and bulk negotiation, I'm all for it. And again, if you want to deal with Republicans, you're willing to make deals on certain things like we are on tax rates here and there, I'm willing to do that too. But when you have the Senate and you just gained seats, when you just gained 8 House seats, when you just won more votes overall among House members running, and when you just won an overwhelming presidential reelection, I'm sorry, but they're the ones that need to do most of the negotiating. That's how it works.
Right. I mean, the only other thing that I saw this, I wish I had a better reference for it, but I literally just saw it for a moment, I think, on CNN or MSNBC or something. And when one of these people, a reporter who was covering it, said that a Republican senator said to her that he didn't know until this dinner how many cuts President Obama was offering or willing to make. So it also begs the question, just on top of bad policy, like what the hell is going on there, just even in terms of basic information?
Yeah, well, that's obviously a huge problem, and I just think it's something to do with the quality of our elected leaders and representatives. 30 years ago, I mean, look, I can list Republicans, George Voinovich of Ohio and Dick Lugar of Indiana, people like that who I didn't agree with on a lot of issues, but nobody could argue they weren't engaged, smart, passionate about certain things they believed in.
Chuck Hagel.
Yeah, Chuck Hagel, but there's right. new – and I disagree with him on a whole hell of a lot of things. But
right.
he cared about things, and he was engaged. You know, Ted Cruz doesn't know his ass from his head.
Right.
You know, can I say that? I guess I just did. You know, I mean, he's a low-rent McCarthy.
Right.
You know, and I mean, so I don't think – I think they don't know. They don't care to know. It's a different culture on the Republican Party. I just wrote a column on that this week about how, frankly, the unifying feature, no matter what your ideology is on the right these days, is anger. It's hating liberals and being angry, and it's not governing, because they used to have a set of policies they agreed upon that were market-based, type programs that actually worked to solve problems, whether you agreed with them or not. Cap and trade, earned income tax credit, which Reagan was the first to support. Cap and trade was supported first by George Bush Sr. Things like that. The individual mandate, whether you agree with it or not, is a policy. You know, but they don't have those anymore. Tell me what their policies are, besides cutting taxes and deregulating more, which is what got us into this mess to begin with. They don't have any policies. It's rejecting liberals and mocking liberals and hating liberals, whatever that means. That's their current set of unifying features. Whether you're McCain sitting up and telling the mother of an Aurora victim that you just need some straight talk, or your Rand Paul lashing out at Hillary Clinton, or your Ron Johnson being the complete moron that he is, and we can go on and on from Gohmert to Bachman to the whole rest of that rogues gallery of people that should never be anywhere near our representative body in a democracy. Of course they're ill informed.
I mean, they shouldn't
they don't know
be
anything.
Anywhere
Louis
near
Gohmert
like...
thinks if you've got guns in schools, that's going to make people safer. Whereas every statistic will tell you no. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He's Justice Scalia doesn't know what the hell he's doing either. He's of the same mold. Racial entitlements, right, for voting. So I think these are all important items that one needs to be aware of, that these guys by design are not educated on the issues because they don't want to be, right? And they also listen to Mitch McConnell, who, as you know, it's good to see him filibustering, as John Stewart pointed out, on drones, because he wasn't there to enable everything President Bush did.
Mitch McConnell is a great humanitarian.
Yes. He's one of the kindest snapping turtles you'll ever meet.
He is like – I mean, Mitch McConnell – whatever else you think about him, I think his profound concern for human rights in South Asia is pretty unimpeachable.
I think that you're exactly right about that, and that's something that I think is important. Don't let the grandmotherly look with the glasses fool you. He's a kind and gentle man.
Right. He's a real sweetheart. I think we're going to kind of get into this final thread here, but I just want to say, I think what you're saying is so, that really the right is an emotional state right now. And, and yesterday, I noticed, someone sent it to me, this woman that I'm friends with, Zerlina Maxwell, who's kind of like, young pundit, writer.
I like Zerlina a lot.
But, she said something, I actually didn't see the, she was on Hannity or something, defending against the premise that the best way to handle rape is for every woman to pack a gun. So it's already just this completely ludicrous premise. And then, you get these people tweeting at her first saying, you're such a moron for opposing women having guns. I guess you want more rape. And then, of course, that turns into, really just the most vile, despicable, disgusting.
I'm sure there were,
like,
she's African American. I'm sure there was racism
you
in
should,
there, too.
And, and you look at this, and it's just like – it's like, the asylum, has been turned over to the inmates, and it's really disturbing.
That's exactly right. And they're stupid because they choose to be stupid. When you choose to reject science, when you erect a whole museum an hour south of me, by the way, if you guys ever want to go for an awesome party, fly out here to Cincinnati. We'll drive down to the Creation Museum in northern Kentucky.
I like
it. It's probably where Rand Paul was actually created. And we can all relive the way people lived in the 1850s in the late 19th century when Wyatt Earp rode Brachiosaurus saddleback into the OK Corral. And people got to live on, and fly on singing dinosaurs and everything else the Bible said that we know only happened a few hundred years ago because the Earth's only about 6,000 years old.
Right.
When you choose to be stupid, you end up being stupid. It's not that all these people start off being dumb. They choose to be ignorant. Marco Rubio wants to be dumb.
At least under Rand Paul, we could go to the Creation Museum high.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said at least under Rand Paul, we could be high when we go to the Creation Museum.
That's true. So there is that. And that may be a justification for why he believes some of the things he believes. If you can get high often enough, which I'm not, by the way, deriding, it can be enjoyable. But in any case –
Well, Rand Paul's a mean stoner.
Yeah.
He's the opposite of Jimmy Reefer Cake. He is the
exactly. If Rand Paul's stoned, he's the guy coming by and stealing things off of your lawn and throwing that. Yeah, of course. That's what he is. That's the sort of the important point in all of this. So when you get to something that Zerlina was talking about, like they assume as fact that if you have, it's already an assumed fact because they don't believe in science and statistics and things. Crazy stuff like that, that if you have a gun on you, you're more likely to be safe, which is, I don't know. You can look at a study from, I think it was 2009, from the University of Pennsylvania School of Epidemiology, Harvard School of Public Health, and looking at personal injury studies, Emory University School of Medicine, and Johns Hopkins School of Public Policy, and they'll all show you the same thing, which is if you have a gun on you, it is more likely to be used against you. If you have a gun in your house, it is more likely to be used against you, or one of your family members is more likely to accidentally shoot themselves or use it to commit suicide. Those are just facts. You can't argue with them. Now, if we want to say you have a constitutional right to have a gun in your house, which the Supreme Court has said, then you can choose to do that. But you can't choose to have your own facts. If you want to have a gun in your house to protect yourself, a handgun or a rifle or a shotgun or something of that sort, you can. But statistically, you are more likely to die because of that gun than you are to kill somebody who breaks into your house, which, by the way, is non-existent. You know, another, I think it was, I'm trying to think, it was the Atlantic Monthly or had a great piece on how the chance of somebody in a violent episode breaking into your house, I think they had it, they broke down all these numbers, they had it at 0.23%. So again, you know, if, knowing that, if you want to have a gun in your house, be my guest. But understand that people who watch Sean Hannity don't get to change the facts and say you're more likely to be safe, or if you're walking around, you know, in the street with a gun, packing a gun to protect yourself, you're more likely to be safe from a rape, because you're not.
There's also
more likely that gun will be turned on you by your rapist, and that's just fact.
There's also something to the fact that not only are they attacking her for the gun issue, but the fact that they find teaching men not to rape as laughable.
Right.
I think this just feeds into their view that all rape is violent. And, you know, if a violent criminal comes at you, you know, all the teachings in the world isn't going to teach someone who's coming at you to violently rape not to rape you. Because, you know, men and who are husbands and fathers and boyfriends, they never rape, because if you're going out with one of them, it's assumed you must give them sex. And, you know,
that's such a fantastic point, because, of course, statistically, most rapes are date rapes.
That's right.
And are done by somebody you know. And so actually having a gun makes it more likely to happen, because quite often that the if it's especially somebody committing domestic abuse or something else, will turn that gun on you.
So what do these guys expect? Like you go out on a date and like you sit down for dinner and the girl just sort of like puts her purse and her, you know, Glock on the table.
Yep, yeah, exactly. You know, you got to set the terms of that date very early on.
Right.
You know, you get your AR-15 on the table, and I think it's all clear.
No, I mean, I have to say, like, I know all of this stuff, and, you know, we kind of see it regularly, but I, you know, to have, I know kind of abstractly, you know, it, whoever it's aimed at, it's horrific, but to see this, you know, person that I am, in fact, friends with, I mean, it was just so despicable, and exactly what Matt said also, you know, it was just really disgusting. I want to get to a final thing here.
It's despicable, it's disgusting, and again, they're stupid. They're ignorant.
Right,
they
and incredibly stupid. I mean, that's – their whole tagline was, America's laughing at you, Zerlina, and I actually wrote, you know, America's laughing and disgusted by you effing morons, was how
well,
my
yeah, right.
missive
Which America
started.
Would that be? Would that be the 92% of America that supports background checks, or the 75% that support an assault weapons ban?
Or the hopefully,
which America is it that's on their side?
Right, exactly. So we'll get into this.
The founding fathers, America.
The founding
fathers. Right, man. The founding fathers, because they knew that tyranny and the government would come and get us and evil and
the founding fathers knew that one
liberty,
day a black
freedom.
Guy would become president and we would need to do something about it.
Because you know what, dude? It's liberty.
Right.
That's all I got for you. It's all about liberty.
So anyway, so on this last piece, I want to cover with you really quickly, because I'm really curious what your take is on this. Because basically President Clinton just published an op-ed in the Washington Post where he said that the bill he signed into law, I think it was – what was it, 17 or 18 years ago, sometime in the mid-90s when I was blissfully unaware of these issues as a, you know, 11-year-old or 10-year-old or however old I was. He signed the Defense of Marriage Act into law, and he's come out now and he said that this is an unconstitutional act, but he still kind of defended why he signed it to begin with. And I want to know what you think of the op-ed, and what is – you know, does President Clinton kind of deserve credit here, or – you know, his gay rights legacy to me seems a little ambiguous, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, let me do what I try to do with these things, and you know, bring some nuance to this, which is I don't think you can say that he was fantastic on gay rights or terrible, but you can say when you know people look back at Don't Ask, Don't Tell as this relic of the past now. But people have to remember that was the progressive policy in '93, and President Clinton expended some capital pushing it. That was a move forward. I know. I remember I went – people forget these things. But I was studying abroad, you know, in college in 93. Not an 11-year-old like you, you young bastard. And just kidding.
It didn't feel like you were kidding.
I'm just having fun. I love all you kids. You kids are great. No, seriously. But I mean, I was studying in England, and you know, they're having a debate on the campus, because it was right after I was part of the College Democrats where I was in school, and then I went off to go study abroad in England, and they had not lifted their ban on gays in the military yet in England. We were ahead of them at that point.
Right.
And they were, I remember having an argument with a guy I thought I was friends with there who was like, we don't want gays in the military, we're not going to go the way you go, and blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, you have to remember, even by the, we always look to Europe as a more progressive place, that was sort of a progressive direction. Doesn't mean I don't think DOMA was terrible, but you also need to remind yourself, Paul Wellstone voted for DOMA.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I mean, so to me, that, and he was a pretty comfortable guy standing up for what he believed was right against, even when he was the only guy to do it. I think that there were two things going on there. I think that there was, that we were in a different place, as everybody knows. Hell, you know, in 2004, people were running against gay marriage as a winning issue. Now look where we are. I mean, we've moved so far, so well on that issue. I think it's a model issue for a lot of us. We're working on other issues, from reasonable gun policies to reproductive justice and many other things that we care about, is looking at how people have been so successful when it's coming to expanding gay rights. And I would say that it was a different dynamic in the 90s. I mean, Jesse Helms was in the Senate, a guy that blocked ambassadors due to their preferences, who blocked – you talk about what they just did to Chuck Hagel. Jesse Helms blocked William Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, who was very pro-gay rights, who was an actual – much more of a libertarian than Rand Paul will ever be,
right.
Who was very pro-gay rights in Massachusetts. That was one of the excuses Jesse Helms used from blocking him from being ambassador to Mexico under Bill Clinton. So just people have to understand where we were. And that, I mean, it's sort of like when you look back and throughout all history, you have to look at things within their context. It doesn't mean that certain behaviors aren't wrong. And I don't let Bill Clinton off the hook completely for that, as I don't let Paul Wellstone completely off the hook. And the 87 senators who I believe voted in favor of that.
But
you also have to reasonably say that there was some political strategy behind that, that I think there were some people that otherwise were in favor of gay rights that said, we need to do this to stop a constitutional amendment.
And that's what President Clinton said, and I thought that was actually very interesting, because he said, look, this sort of took it off the table to a degree. There was a march to actually enshrine discrimination in the Constitution, and the smart move at that time was to actually sign this bill and get away from that conversation. And that was his political
defense. That may have been right. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I worked on his reelection in 96. Yeah. On the polling team, I wasn't part of the White House or the policy apparatus, so I can't speak to what was going on behind closed doors, but I do think that there's probably some of that sentiment. I know that polling numbers were showing, you know, we weren't the country we are now when it comes to gay rights. And I'm not saying that that makes it right, but also, sometimes you do things politically because and they may seem bad at the time, or they may seem bad in hindsight, like don't ask, don't tell. But don't ask, don't tell was a step forward. So maybe Clinton should have led more on the issue. Maybe he should have fought more for it. Maybe more people like Paul Wellstone should have fought more for it. And so we can be critical. But again, nuance is important here, and understanding that this was such a different country back then in terms of how we viewed these issues overall. I'm not saying individuals here are like myself, you know, and that's not to say I haven't been wrong on issues before too, because I certainly have been. But overall, you know, I'm saying that people were not fighting for gay rights back then, and you know, it was a movement was a lot further behind where it is now.
And he took major heat for what he arguably, as far as I read it, lost Congress in '94, and pushing for gay rights in the military context was a big reason for that, arguably politically. So it wasn't he was completely cowardly on these issues at all.
Yes, and so I think we have to look at all of that. And I think most of the people who I'm close friends with, because I have a number of friends who are gay rights activists, it's an issue I feel a lot of the issues, social issues, are ones that you know, equality for people passionately sort of animates me, and that's you know, an issue that I don't happen to work on for any clients or anything, but I feel strongly about it. I write about it. I speak about it. And I think most of my friends in that community would view it that way.
Right.
There was a sort of protective action back then. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it free of blame necessarily. But it's got a more complicated history. And I think that, you know, what he's doing right now and speaking out in the way he is hugely important and maybe will help us. Although, again, anything that goes in front of the Supreme Court while Scalia's sitting there, I don't necessarily like our odds.
The one man road to devolution, Antonin Scalia. So, Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for leading me through this today, man.
Yeah, well, you know, come on. I'm the follower. You're the leader here, pal.
I'm doing my best.
You're the guy with the imprimatur, if I may use that word, of the Majority Report. I'm just your humble guest.
No, you're...
Now, you know, I always thought, you know, the chemistry between Sam and Cliff was what was so amazing about this segment, but it's clear that the heavyweight champ here is Cliff Schechter.
Or it's clear that Cliff and I are also Mishpuga as well. We're Mishpuga, Cliff.
Yeah, what the hell do we need Sam for? Let him hang out with little Cassius Clay Cedar.
Yeah.
And we'll do this show every week.
I love it. All right. Thanks so much,
nothing
Cliff.
Nothing but love for Sam and you guys, too. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh,
thank
such
you,
a pleasure, Cliff. Take care, man.
Have a great weekend, guys.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. That was my interview with Cliff Schechter, along with Matt Binder. We're going to transition in a few minutes, right?
Yeah, we're going to transition. We'll have Matthew Film Guy on.
Matthew Film Guy.
I believe we're going to be doing things a little bit different with Matthew Film Guy because, you know, Sam and Matthew have their you know, every week when Matthew comes on, Sam asks him about the movie that he previously recommended and they talk about it. We're going to keep their, you know, their threaded conversations, you know, pristine. And Matt's going to come on and recommend us some TV picks.
That's awesome. And I have to say, as someone who's watches has been, you know, sitting here, I've always felt like Film Guy Matthew and Matt need to talk. And there's like a roadblock to it. And that roadblock has been Sam Cedar.
he has shot it down right at the top.
So
every
I'm
time.
Really excited for this conversation. So hang with us, folks. We're going to switch here and we'll be back momentarily with Film Guy Matthew or Matthew Film Guy.
All right, we are back, folks. On the phone with us right now is Matthew Film Guy. But before we get to Matthew, we have to play Matthew Film Guy's theme song.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe I'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, Film Guy.
All right, Matthew, you there?
Yes, I am here.
Awesome. One
Glad
second,
to be
actually.
Here, guys.
Could we put up the volume on that right there? This right here. See this box right here?
Hold on.
Give Michael 1 second here, Matthew. Sorry about this.
No problem. I think you guys are doing great.
See the one labeled Sam right there? No, right in front of it. Right in front of it. Right in front of it. You see the one labeled Sam? Put that up a little bit. Matthew, talk for a second.
Sure. So that was the Matthew Film Guy theme created by the great, talented Jason Pace, also known as the Talls. Want to shout out to him for knowing that I love Master of Puppets and giving me an appropriate theme song.
I think it's very appropriate.
Yeah.
So, Matthew.
Great sense of humor and musicianship. Yes, go ahead.
So, Matthew, you know, usually you come on the show and Sam is here. I am not Sam. You and Sam usually discuss a movie on Netflix or streaming anywhere else that he can watch at home because his wife does not let him go out to the movies. However, Sam has had a child, and
yes.
Being that Sam has had a child, Sam is not here. And on top of that, yes. Sam will, you know, there's even less of a chance for Sam to go to the movies now with two kids.
So oh, yeah, I thought, it's all over for that.
Yes, it's
even
totally,
streaming is going to be a problem.
Yes, even that is true. So I thought, you know, let's keep your conversations on film and movies that you've previously recommended. You know, let's keep that to Sam. And I thought you'd come on
sure.
today and discuss, you know, TV series on Netflix or streaming. And the reason for this even additionally is the fact that Sam might have to get more than just a movie now, being that he's going to be home so much. He might need to watch an entire TV series to keep himself sane.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, I'd be happy to supply you with one. I've been a connoisseur of the recent TV sort of boom. So, yeah, I've got something good for you.
Sweet. So let's get right into it. Give me something.
All right. Well, I want to go to bat for the show on HBO called Tremé.
Ah, Tremé.
And I don't know if you've seen this show very much, but I think it's a great show for any listener of The Majority Report in general. It does have a sort of a political sort of overtone to it, but it's from the creative team behind The Wire, which is a lot of people consider one of the greatest television serials of all time. It shares the sort of novelistic structure with The Wire, where it's not exactly high drama, although even compared to The Wire, which, you know, frankly, was a cop show, this is even more subtle. It's not as sensational, and it has a real indie film sensibility. And many of the directors of the episodes are all actually indie film directors, people like Jim McKay or even Tim Robbins. And Jessica Holland has directed a few episodes. So there's a lot of talent involved. And it's basically a very character-based story with intertwining storylines all surrounding how various levels of society in New Orleans responded to Katrina. It covers everything from street musicians to the local bar owners in the Tremé, which is a particular neighborhood in New Orleans, to the high-finance real estate dealers using the crisis to further their own commercial interests, down to the outside journalists coming in trying to crack the kind of cone of silence in investigating certain nefarious police behavior during the storm, particularly one mysterious possible police-caused death, and with a heavy presence of the real New Orleans traditional music, which I can personally say I had no appreciation of before the show. I knew very little besides Ico Ico and Saints Go Marching In, but it has lots of live music depicted, and some of the main characters are musicians, and it's featured bands like Galactic, who I've come to love, Kermit Ruffins, even Fats Domino made an appearance. And the whole thing's kind of wrapped together in a very Altman-esque, you know, in the sort of multi-story way, not the cynical kind of condescending to its characters way, sort of organic storytelling. And it's not high drama, and a lot of people have sort of found it a little hard to get into, but I think it really rewards patient viewing, nuanced characters, who, and it's despite it has a kind of reliance on political themes, things like the tearing down of houses that were also pegged to be renovated, corruption in the government, you know, corruption in the police department, and the desire to change the face of certain neighborhoods in the aftermath of the flood, a kind of shock doctrine thing, you know, and families who moved out. But despite all that kind of political stuff, it always centers on a very soft kind of touch emotional characterization of the people themselves. And many of the characters are artists, and it comes from this artist's point of view. Street musicians, also a chef, and also something that I didn't know much about, an Indian chief, played by Clark Peters, who was also from The Wire, talking about the way they dress up in the traditional kind of Indian ceremonies that they march in Mardi Gras, and that was very fascinating for me to sort of get into and how seriously they take it. And a lot of these people are all based on actual people that David Simon, the creator, adapted for the show. And you'll recognize a lot of people on the show, too. Melissa Leo, the Oscar winner from The Fighter, who was also on Homicide, their earlier show. She plays a civil rights lawyer. John Goodman plays a college professor. Wendell Pierce, who was Bunk on The Office, or on The Wire, sorry, plays the so-called third-best trombone player in New Orleans. He's kind of struggling to make a living as a musician. I can highly recommend the first season, which is on Netflix streaming. The second season actually gets even better, and the first season lays the basis down in a kind of gentle way, and the second season moves forward on a lot more sort of plot points, and it gets a little bit more of the high drama. Never anything too sensationalistic, but two police-based storylines that develop more in the second season. And it really makes you feel like you're learning about the area. I've never been there, so I'd have to defer to others on how close to reality it actually is, but from what I understand, it has been embraced for its, you know, warts and all depiction of the New Orleans world. So if you have the patience, I know sometimes Sam doesn't have the patience.
It is extremely interesting you say that, actually, because I started watching that show. And
yeah.
I didn't make the decision, you know, I'm going to stop watching this show. But it was just one of those shows that, you know, when it comes to your TV viewing, it just, you just peter off and you don't.
Yeah.
What are you playing?
I had a similar take on the first season, but I was really glad I stuck with it, especially once the second season kicks in. But I understand what you're saying, and that's why I think it is a show you got to give a chance to and really realize that you're sort of getting to know, you're spending time getting to know all the characters and the sort of world. And it starts to pay off even greater emotional dividends towards the second season.
Yeah. I got to give it another chance. I mean, you've sold me. I mean,
That's
I thought it was
a
good
you.
Show to begin with. And I just, you know, it's hard for me to watch those HBO shows, actually. I don't know
okay.
why. It's just, I like watching I like getting into shows that are, you know, I guess if there's no choice, like in a show, like I guess. I just started watching a show called Terra Nova. You familiar with that show?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I gave that its day in court.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I watched the first episode, and I thought that show was incredible until they got to Terra Nova, which happens in the
right.
first episode. So
yep.
It kind of destroyed me ever watching the rest of that series. But the reason I'm bringing that show up is because
do yourself a favor and get off board. That was one that I just beat into the ground. I couldn't believe I kept watching it.
Do you
one
agree
the
that the show was
premises,
actually, that first episode was actually really good until they went to Terra Nova?
Then it just goes horribly sappy, terribly sentimental family Spielberg drama
spoiler
bad.
Alert.
You know, I think
alert.
I think the whole, you know, the whole. We're a family. We have to do this because we're a family. That line
exactly.
of dialogue,
Duke.
That
Sorry,
line of dialogue
Duke.
That I've also heard in like Revolutions and 100 other shows. I think that
yeah.
line of dialogue is like the 21st century is, you know, like, hey, how you doing, honey? Like from the early movies that you hear in like every single like old school black and white film. You know what I mean? Like, I swear every single TV show that, you know, has that family.
Yeah, you know what it is? You know what it is, Matt? It's they're trying to play across all demographics. So you get the sci-fi nerds looking for the space and time travel stuff or the, you know, same thing with Revolution. Then you have the sort of middle-of-the-road family viewing attempt to grab, you know, the whole family watching with this, I'm fighting for my brother or my sister or my daughter or my uncle. And it's extremely manipulative. It's extremely cheap. But it's what I think advertisers are looking for because they want everybody watching this, not just the sort of committed sci-fi kind of intellectual nerd or whatever, you know, which granted I am. But that is what explains that, and it's a real letdown that they sort of – you know, they insult their audience by feeling like they need to spoon-feed them this kind of a pablum about family. But you know what? That's most pop culture and most entertainment. They're covering their – bases, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason I mentioned Terra Nova is basically because I was gonna say it's hard for me to get into a show when it's on streaming if it's not currently on air. Because to me, I mean, it's a full series. I'd rather get into a show that I could then watch on a weekly basis. Because I do enjoy watching shows where you can't just skip ahead and watch the whole series in one sitting. I mean, I enjoy waiting week by week. I mean, that's why I love a show like The Walking Dead. I mean, I'm lucky that I got into it early. That's because I'm a zombie fan. But I mean, I got into it early. I've been watching it since the beginning. But I love waiting every week for it. It kills me because I love the show so much.
You know, that's very old. That's very old school of you, Matt. I think that pattern is changing a lot. You know, a lot of people now realize, like, oh my God, you have to wait a whole week to watch a show. I want to sit down. I want to be able to watch four in a sitting. I want to be able to watch it tomorrow. I want to watch it the next day until it's done. So I appreciate your old school behavior. I mean, I remember having to wait an entire summer to understand what happened to Captain Picard once he was absorbed by the Borg. I had to wait all summer. It sucked. Now someone who watches that will just flip to the next episode and know it immediately. So
I mean, I think
there is a certain pleasure in that.
I think it works to the favor of some of these shows to wait each week. I mean, I understand if you sit down and want to watch some sitcom, like 50 episodes of some sitcom in one sitting or something like that. But I mean, I got into Doctor Who this year, the reboot with Doctor Who.
Congratulations.
And I've been watching it. Yeah, it's an amazing show. I can't believe it took me this long. But I actually have to I'll watch one or two episodes, and I have to stop myself. And I go, I don't want to watch it all right now, because then I just don't want to do that. I want to try to watch it.
Well, you see, a show like that has certain thrills and certain buttons that it pushes every week. So do you want to be mind-blown and thrilled with even Walking Dead? How much gore can you take in one sitting?
Well,
you know,
I could take a lot of gore, actually. It's more of the suspense that I like to...
Okay. Well,
I mean, you could put all the massacre you want in one episode.
They put you through the paces. What's that?
You could put all the massacre you want in one episode, and I'll be fine with that.
Okay, well, maybe we.
However,
should,
when it comes to
know,
this is, I guess
check.
I should give a spoiler alert here. I won't mention the characters by name, but there was a certain episode in The Walking Dead where I felt like they did something with two characters in the same episode, which would have had more suspense and made what happened to these two characters more important if they gave them their own episode for this to happen to these two characters. I think you know what I'm talking about.
All right. Can I just, I do. I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's a show that I've been frustrated with at times too, but you know, my girlfriend and I watch that religiously now, and it's gotten some very bogged down moments, and then it's like sped up the plot to sort of make up for it. So, you know, I don't consider that one of the top tier greatest television shows, but it definitely is addictive viewing just because of its sort of cliffhanger, nail biting, anyone could die kind of propulsiveness.
Oh, I disagree. So, I think that it's the best television show I've ever seen.
Ever?
it is amazing. I really go. Like let's put it this way. I watch those AMC shows just to get those other AMC shows just to get that here's a sneak peek at next week's The Walking Dead.
So you pass by Breaking Bad, you pass by The Wire, you pass by The Sopranos, you pass by 6 Feet Under, you pass by Deadwood, you pass by all those to get to the zombie show?
All good shows. No. I don't mean those. No. I mean like the AMC shows they throw on the end of The Walking Dead
but
get
you
people
said it
to...
was the best show ever made. That's what he's calling you out
thank
on.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, no. I think it's the most – maybe not. Maybe, you know, you could argue that there's better shows with better actors. You know, storyline-wise, there may be better shows. But when it comes to the total package, The Walking Dead is perfect.
Well, it's gripping. I'll give you that. It's gripping in a plot kind of narrative way. And believe me, I watch it every week. No complaints about that. But it doesn't have the same pleasure as the sort of deep sort of emotional catharsis or the kind of subtle emotions that it reaches, like Tremé, for instance.
Matt, I want to step out of this, but can you hit back harder in that? That's like the most insane thing I've ever heard. First of all. Like, nothing.
Are you talking to Matt over there?
No, I'm talking to you, because the idea that The Walking Dead is better than The Wire,
The
Wire is the best show ever
made.
Okay,
leave him alone.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. There's no use in pursuing that kind of conversation. Let people check it out for themselves.
Oh, okay.
The Walking Dead, you don't have to pay as close attention to. I don't know if that's a sign of a more intelligent show. You know, you can tune in and just be like, oh, my God, who's that? Whoa! You know, it doesn't need as much attention paid as The Wire or Tremé or even Deadwood. Or
The Sopranos. You know, The Sopranos is a great show.
Exactly. I mean, The Sopranos is sort of the first of these major achievements in sort of serial television.
But, you know, if you want the full Walking Dead experience, you have to, read the comic books along with it so you could see what they're doing the same, what they're doing different, where it's trailed off, who are they giving more of a role to, who are they giving less of a role to.
Actually, Matt, co-producer Matt, really quick question for you. I know your girlfriend loves shows like this, but like Walking Dead, but if she didn't like Walking Dead, would you shoot her?
I wouldn't shoot her.
You don't remember that story?
Would you hit her with a crossbow and then remove the arrow so you could use it again?
Yeah. Wait, what was that story?
There was a story in Gawker a couple of months ago where a guy shot his girlfriend
because she didn't like
The Walking Dead.
Yeah, they got into an argument and it turned out.
I remember that story.
That's a gun control issue right there.
Listen, I wouldn't do that, but I would have to reevaluate things.
There's a kind of show, like even The Sopranos, I have to say, dipped into this, where you're compelled by who's going to die next. And so you're gripped and you feel like your heart racing and your blood's pumping and your sort of lizard reptilian brain is sort of engaged because someone's going to die. And that's great and that's enjoyable.
No, but in The Walking Dead, it's not just someone is going to die. In The Walking Dead, anyone at any time can die. Nobody is safe.
That's right.
There's no other show like that. Give me a break. Literally, you can say no one on The Walking Dead is safe. Literally. There is not one character.
I think Rick has got to be pretty safe, don't you think? Rick has got to be pretty safe.
You know what? That's only so they could continue the show for – Carl is the one who's safe because he's the one who I think the show is actually about. He is the one who the show is actually about.
You could be right about that.
So we need Rick to basically help build up Carl more. But once that's done, Rick can go. We don't need Rick.
Well, the show is turning quickly into The Talking Dead. But yes, I agree. The show could be about Carl.
We could use the show fire, yep. But all right, so that's the show. What was the show you recommended again? I can't even remember.
Tremé, my friend, Tremé.
You didn't even remember.
Tremé. No, I saw, you know what?
Unbelievable.
You know what? This is going to sound ridiculous, but you know why I stopped watching Tremé, actually, and now I remember it? It was between, I had time for Tremé and True Blood at the time. There was only room in my life for one show set in New Orleans.
And, of course, you picked the garbage vampire show.
I picked True Blood.
I agree with my girlfriend that vampires have no business being rednecks. You know, if you live for 100 years, you should be able to get out of the trailer park. But
be a little refined. Well, not in this age of decreased social mobility, Matthew.
Is that right? Is it even affecting the vampire demographic?
Even affecting the vampire demographic. Well, think of their eligibility on Social Security. Sorry.
They are the ones draining the system in more ways than one. Okay. Yeah.
Actually, can I ask Matthew? I just want to ask you one question. I know we have to wrap up soon. I thought Boardwalk Empire was a major letdown from the other kind of like HBO epics, gangster.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Am I right or am I wrong?
You know, I'm a fan of the show, but I certainly wouldn't put it up there with The Wire or The Sopranos. The last season definitely was its best. And it definitely has the balls to take off certain characters that you didn't think it was going to take off. So on that level of storytelling, it was great. I happen to love just living in the era with the attention to detail that it has. So that's a pleasure for me. But, yeah, I would agree it's not quite at that level. But it has gotten a lot better as it went on. And I'm going to watch the next season too. So,
cool. All right.
So I think what we could take from this conversation is get into Tremé if you can. But be sure not to miss Sunday, AMC, 9 p.m., The Walking Dead, followed by Chris Hardwick hosting The Talking Dead, which is a show that basically talks about The Walking Dead.
Oh, that was – I thought you coined that today. Oh, my God. Okay.
No, I didn't coin that. I was actually saying we're biting another show's sort of a riff, but that's all right.
All right. I have no idea. I've never seen The Walking Dead. This is not my wheelhouse.
Well, you've obviously missed out on something major. Fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to die.
Yeah. the first part of the second season was really difficult of the Walking Dead, the whole farm storyline.
Well, you know what? Before we leave, we have to talk about this really quickly. I completely disagree. Let me do it really quickly. I completely disagree. Listen, a lot of people think the second season was boring because they stayed on the farm for so long and nothing really happened. But you know what?
Yeah.
That's why you care about the characters so much, because they built those characters up like crazy during the second season. You got to know them on a personal level. We heard a lot about their backstory. We got to see them a lot. We got to hang out with them a lot because they were basically just sitting on a farm talking. That was super important to you caring about those characters so much in the third season, and that's why it's so at the edge of your seat right now, wondering what's going to happen to these people you care so much about because of the second season. Thank you very much.
Whoa.
You're welcome. I appreciate your enthusiasm.
All right, Matthew, Everyone should go watch Matthew's picks.
The Treme experience is highly subtle, highly rewarding, and very interesting.
And you know what? I think the audience that listens to this show will actually enjoy Treme much more than The Walking Dead. So,
yeah,
I agree. You know what? Matthew always brings us great movies, even though sometimes he explains them in a pompous way. But but Matthew's
that's my brand. That's my
that
brand.
Is your brand. That is your brand. Maybe you should filibuster the next time there's a talk on television, so you could build your brand up there too. But
we'll see. Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
I can't thank you enough, Matthew. This was great. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
You too. Bye, bye, guys.
Bye. All right, folks. I can't believe that we pulled off a Friday.
We've pulled off Friday. Are we doing a freebie Friday?
I don't. Usually we ask Sam, and he's not here, so I guess it's just up to us.
Then I would say.
You know what? I think.
Yeah, tell me.
If you are a member of the show.
Yes.
I am in the better half, and you decide whether those freebies should get a freebie Friday.
Well, they would need to. I am like now because we're running.
We're running. Yeah, we'll go a little bit
all
over.
Right, throw
a little
bit throw over. Open the IMs. Let's get those cooking.
All right, let's go into the better half of the show.
So we are going to the better half of the show.
Well, let's. Oh, that's true.
Let's go into the tease of the better half of the show.
Okay, well, support this show by becoming a member.
Yes.
Majority.fm, right there at the top, there's the links to support this show. You could become a member today, folks. We need your support more than ever. I mean, Sam has a child now, a second child now. So
Literally
a second child now. So, I mean, you can support this show in other ways other than becoming a member, by subscribing to our show on YouTube, subscribing to our show on iTunes, clicking the Amazon link and bookmarking it and doing all of your purchases through the Majority Report affiliate link there. What else? I'm currently having a mental block.
Tweet out YouTubes of the show. Facebook them. Tell your friends about the show. But most importantly, if you can, definitely become a member. That really is the best way to do it.
And this is extra important now.
Yeah.
You need to let Sam know what you thought of me and Michael these past 2 days.
Right.
I think it's very important for him to know, because if this was a failure to all of you, we should never do this again. But if you enjoyed it, I think we should.
That wasn't good communications framing. You should have said, if this was a success, you let us know.
I want to know if we did bad too.
No, of course, but you—that's the second option.
I'm not out for myself like you are here. If we did bad, if people did not enjoy this, we should not give them more of this. I think that's
again bad for me. What are you doing, man?
All right, let's just go to the better half.
Well, you
go to the better half.
All right, we'll go to the. You know what, folks? We're gonna go to the better half of the show, if I can figure out how to put.
The soundboard right there. See, it's right. It should be up on your screen. You don't have to click anything on the bottom. You see the soundboard?
I did.
And then a little bit lower. But that was it. You did it.
Well, it's already mid.
Currently caller number 3, waiting to speak with a representative. The estimated hold time...
All right, folks. Yeah, Michael's getting used to the board here. That was a little bit abrupt, but he's getting used to the board.
I bring an abrupt style to the board.
All right, let's quickly get to some IMs, and then we'll go into a few stories while we have very little time, but we'll we'll attempt what we can here. Let's see what we got here. 767654. F the freeloaders. Sam gives them way too many Freebie Fridays.
Word. Okay.
Wow. Bush and Chains, No Name Cedar. Well, that's one way to keep their baby's name off serial killer Obama's murder list.
Wait, I think he said he did that yesterday.
No, that's today.
Really?
Keep voting. February, multiple job holders rose by a record as full-timers dropped, part-timers increased. Hey, just like George W. Bush in Feb 2005, you work 3 jobs. That's uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that's fantastic that you're doing that. All right, Bush.
Yeah, that was but that's true. That was one of the most, that was such a despicable moment.
Oh, definitely. But yeah. Jay Tingle, make everything free all the time. The show was so successful today that I think Matt should get his own drive. Wasn't this yesterday?
This is all yesterday.
I see this for today, though. This is weird.
Want to try to go to
the
phones.
He says it again. I see both IMs. Matt should get his own drive time show. Cool mashup to end the first half of the show. Lapoupe versus That's When I Reach for My Revolver. I noticed Matt accidentally. I'm saying my name because I'm going crazy.
Are.
Michael accidentally played 2 songs in the outro. That was the weirdest thing I've ever heard. But
it's a mashup.
Yeah.
It was all intentional.
Michael's a big fan of mixes. So.
Yes.
Avedon says, so did Rand Paul just filibuster to get a phony fundraising letter out of it? Let's get to Rand Paul, actually. Let's get to Rand Paul really quick. And I get to Rand
Paul. Do you want to try to open the phones again today? Or
yes, I'm going to try to open the phones again today. Let me just get to this story.
Okay, go to Rand Paul.
Let's get to the story really quick. And I get to Rand Paul by way of Elizabeth Warren.
Boom.
And there's a reason for this. So Elizabeth Warren's out there. Elizabeth Warren appearing before the Senate Banking Committee hearing Thursday. Senator Elizabeth Warren grilled officials from the Treasury Department over why criminal charges were not filed against officials at HSBC who helped launder hundreds of millions of dollars for drug cartels. The HSBC scandal resulted in the Department of Justice and Treasury announcing a record $1.92 billion fine after finding that the international bank repeatedly helped the world's most violent drug gangs move at least $881 million in ill-gotten gains through numerous countries the U.S. has economic sanctions against. Let's listen to what Elizabeth Warren had to say really quick. Just put that up right there.
The United States government takes money laundering very seriously for a very good reason. And it puts very strong penalties in place. In addition to monetary penalties, it's possible to shut down a bank that's been involved in money laundering. Individuals can be banned from ever participating in financial services again, and people can be sent to prison. Now, in December, HSBC admitted to money laundering, to laundering $881 million that we know of, for Mexican and Colombian drug cartels, and also admitted to violating our sanctions for Iran, Libya, Cuba, Burma, the Sudan. And they didn't do it just one time. It wasn't like a mistake. They did it over and over and over again across a period of years. And they were caught doing it, warned not to do it, and kept right on doing it, and evidently making profits doing it. Now, HSBC paid a fine, but no one individual went to trial, no individual was banned from banking, and there was no hearing to consider shutting down HSBC's activities here in the United States. So what I'd like is, you're the experts on money laundering, I'd like your opinion. What does it take? How many billions of dollars do you have to launder for drug lords, and how many economic sanctions do you have to violate before someone will consider shutting down a financial institution like this?
So,
the United States government takes...
So David S. Cohen, Treasury Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, did not answer Warren's question. He did say, for our part, we imposed on HSBC the largest penalties that we've ever imposed on any financial institution ever. Warren reiterated her question and still got nowhere. Finally, she turned to the Federal Reserve Board member, Jerome H. Powell, who said that we don't do criminal investigations. Warren continued on here with, you know, if we're caught, if you're caught with an ounce of cocaine, the chances are good you're going to jail. If it happens repeatedly, you may go to jail for the rest of your life. But evidently, if you launder nearly $1 billion for drug cartels and violate our international sanctions, your company pays a fine and you go home and sleep in your own bed at night. Every individual associated with this, I think it's fundamentally wrong. Now, I bring this up not because it's important to bring up and because I love Elizabeth Warren, but everyone...
He really loves Elizabeth Warren.
She's great.
I just got to say, like, Matt loves Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, okay.
Strongly.
No, but I bring this up when I say talking about Rand Paul, because one of the things I saw yesterday was a lot of, you know, where were the progressive Democrats standing with Rand Paul on this? Cenk said specifically on the Young Turks, where were people like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren? Now, I mean, yes, I agree completely. But at the same time, why isn't someone like Rand Paul standing up on prosecuting these bankers who are doing something illegally, like help out drug cartels, who help finance terrorism that goes...
Who's standing with Elizabeth?
Yeah, who's standing with Elizabeth? I mean, who is standing up against these bankers with Elizabeth? Why isn't Rand Paul... Let's put aside Rand Paul's, you know, libertarian ideals where he believes less regulation would help with these... would help the...
It would make laundering money potentially even easier.
It would make... No, for real,
which
though.
Would be good for the market.
But let's put aside this for a second. Why doesn't Rand Paul stand up against these bankers who are doing things illegally that funds terrorism that hurts this country? Well, it's the same reason why Rand Paul wants to help tax dodgers. Like when he, in January, blocked treaties with Luxembourg, Hungary, and Switzerland, popular tax havens that would help the U.S. government track down corporations and wealthy tax cheats who stash cash in their banks. And that's because, as Dicting Info's Rika Christensen found out with checkingopensecrets.org, Mr. Paul raised nearly three times the average war chest for senatorial candidates, with nearly $10 million over the past 5 years. The majority of that came from the top five contributors, which were financial companies and the Koch brothers. In fact, only two of the top 10 contributors were not concerned with finances, capital, union busting, and banking.
Yep.
Who's standing with Elizabeth Warren? That's my question.
Well, not only is Rand Paul not standing with her, he's standing actively against her.
Yes.
And I think, you know, that's a really important number you pulled out. And the reality is that – and I think that's the thing about especially the brand of libertarians. And I would love – it would be great to get a libertarian on the call – on the line today. But I think the brand – I mean, libertarians generally, and then particularly the Pauls, this is a political belief system that is so crackpot. It's so ahistorical. It's so delusional about the nature of how the economy, government, society, investment work that it really is the intellectual equivalent of Scientology. It's just that the Scientologists don't, you know, aren't out actively pushing an agenda that benefits people like the Koch brothers and like financial firms. That's the only reason that these ideas have any real intellectual footing in this country. It's pure astroturfing. There's nothing there, and there's a complete synchronicity between these delusional political ideas and letting financial institutions launder money and all the rest. I have to say, though, just parenthetically, I remember in college, I didn't think about it too much, so don't jump down my throat here, but I studied international relations, and I had a moment where I was like, maybe I should go do work at a hedge fund or something for a couple of years. It's a long time ago.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. But it was a brief thought. And honestly, one of the things I had was I thought, you know, fundamentally, I just think that would be really boring. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to work at one of those places for 13 hours a day. Had I known that there was this like exciting, like global gangster element to financial work, I might have rethought it. I had no idea how interesting it could be.
There you go, Michael Brooks.
I had no idea.
He wishes he was a money launderer for drug cartels.
Well, wow.
Let's try, exactly, but go ahead.
Why don't we go back to the IM?
Let's try to go to the phones, actually.
Yeah.
Let's attempt this. We failed miserably yesterday.
Pray to God this works.
All right, 201 area code. Who's this? Do you have the phones up?
Who's this?
Oh, wait, I hear you. Look at that. Put it a little bit louder.
Go ahead.
My phone's next to my ear.
Oh, no, not you. I'm sorry. I'm talking to Michael. It's kind of difficult here today.
Talk louder. We can't hear you.
I think it's our favorite libertarian, Ed from New Jersey.
Yeah. I couldn't hear that.
Is this Eddie Haskell from New Jersey? Sorry. Go ahead.
We know it's you, Dan. How you doing?
This is kind of awkward with three people at once, but you guys are grinding it out. Some growing pains, but good job so far.
Thank you very much, Dan.
So good.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Go ahead.
All right. I was going to talk about the thing on global warming, but real quick to address what you just said. I don't know the specifics of Rand Paul. He's not, in my opinion, a libertarian. Although in some libertarian opinions, I'm probably a socialist to them.
But, right.
So is Gary Johnson, apparently. What I want to address is, I think, Michael, I think a lot you mentioned global warming. So your first caller will be something that you're interested in.
It's so funny. I'm totally not trying to sound like Sam here, but. Please get to the point, because I would love to respond to what you're saying.
All right. Yeah, I'm not too good at the calls.
No. Practice makes slightly more perfect. No, I'm just messing with you. Go ahead.
We're learning that here, we're all growing together.
Yeah, we're all growing. That was very socialist of you, Matt. All right, go ahead. Get to your point.
Okay, real quick. The global warming debate. Denying global warming. All right, first thing off the table. Absolutely not. But the thing is that I'm afraid that this debate is getting ruled a lot by more like fear mongering and scare tactics and using.
Okay. All right. So can I? All right. So I just want to get to like the actual science of global warming. Okay. So there was a study that was conducted a couple years ago by it was either Science or Nature magazine. There was a study that went into every single piece of climate research and scientific research on global warming, every single peer-reviewed, real, legitimate article on the actual science of climate change. We're not talking about political debate, policy debate, just actually literally what's happening, the correlation between.
I want to talk about the science too, yeah.
No, no. So the reality was that when all of those peer-reviewed articles were reviewed, not a single one denied the connection between greenhouse gases and climate change. Some said there was a direct correlation, and some just measured climate change and didn't go into the causes behind it. So there is not a single credible person out there that denies that something's happening here and it's rooted in greenhouse gas emissions. Now, some people might say it's going to be less severe. Some people might say it's going to be less dangerous. But there isn't an actual person anywhere that doesn't acknowledge that it isn't actually happening and it isn't caused by greenhouse gas emissions. So that's just to establish.
I'm not debating that at all. I just mentioned that I'm actually trying to use the most credible source which you could argue there are others, but I would say the IPCC.
Right. That's a credible source, sure.
Pretty much the most widely accepted. The point is, let me just get to the damn point. Right. All right. Now
you're the one who's – okay. Go.
All right. Cut carbon emissions, cut carbon emissions. Things like Kyoto Protocol. All right, we all know what that is. It helped cut 1990 levels of CO2 by 2012 in 1997. That
which has completely not happened. It's been totally missed.
And would have lowered the temperature by 0.008 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century if we followed through with that. My point is we're taking these kinds of policies. Cap and trade is just crony capitalism, but they don't actually fix the global warming.
Okay. So actually, I think this is an interesting criticism because what you're saying I think is potentially right. I think you're right. The Kyoto targets probably are not aggressive enough. So then the question becomes, how do we actually get and meet the problem of global warming? in my mind, that means a combination of much heavier regulation and much deeper and stronger accelerated investment. And just like a lot of other things, like the internet, which again, look, the internet opened up a lot of private commerce, but it was funded and launched by government money. It's going to be the same in the energy sector. And we talk about crony capitalist and cap and trade, and I actually think you're right about there could be some problems in cap and trade. But nowhere near the amount of money that's going to go into starting up cap and trade is a fraction of the amount that we throw to energy companies every day to basically just drill on public land and give us back, you know, a fraction of the value of what they get for free, what they get incentivized to drill to begin with. It's ludicrous. So what I think that's interesting. If you think that Kyoto doesn't go far enough, I agree with you. But I think in order to reach the targets of Kyoto, we're going to actually need to have some serious reform and regulation of some industries. We're actually legitimately running up against the clock. But I'll tell you what, if you call back again while we're hosting, I will gladly take you on again. I think that's a really good point you made about Kyoto.
All right. I just wanted to make that and last comment, and then I'll let you guys go. Just the point is that these just cut carbon emissions. Now, I agree in research and development, you know, fine research and development. That, I think, is really the solution. I'll get into a couple other things more.
Well, we don't have much time, but I just got to say there's no contradiction.
I'm going to get going.
Thanks
for taking my call.
No, my pleasure.
Thank you, Dan.
My pleasure, Dan. There's no contradiction between research and development.
Let's go to the next call. 1 second. 914. Who's this? You got to turn your sound down now. There we go.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, what a show.
It's Jermo. Yeah.
How you doing, Jermo?
I haven't stopped laughing since I turned the phone, turned the radio on yesterday. Oh, my God. Listen, Michael.
Yeah.
You and Cliff. You got, I don't know if you know this, but you were talking to Cliff. When you were talking to Cliff on the phone, when you got him on the phone, you were actually on. You were on. Oh. We could hear the conversation, the introduction that you know, you and Cliff were just, what are you going to talk about and stuff. We could hear you.
Oh.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay.
No, I totally did.
I just got it real quick. Real quick, I promise.
That's embarrassing.
Really, really quick.
Okay.
Yesterday, I tried to get on, and I was holding for quite a while.
Sorry, we don't know what happened yesterday.
What's that?
Sorry, we don't know what happened yesterday.
Oh, well, let me tell you real quick. So what happens, I'm waiting a long time, and all of a sudden, somebody gets on, and they said, hello. And I said, yeah, oh, this is Jermo speaking. So he says his name, he says something. I can't really make him out. And I'm saying, that's not Michael, and it's not Matt. I said, who is it? He says, this is Bob from Albany. And I said, Bob, oh, you're the lawyer?
We had some real problems with the phone system yesterday.
Yeah, we must be on a conference call. So I said, well, listen, Bob, I think we should both hang up, and then we'll try to get back. So he says, no. He starts explaining to me what he wanted to talk to you guys about. I'm dying.
Hey, we're bringing Majority Report listeners together accidentally.
But the most important thing, too, we really start to see how hard it is to do a show and how hard Sam works to get this show going. Thanks to me. We love you guys.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Love you too, man.
Bye.
Thanks. Become a member. Not you. Not you, obviously, but everybody.
Let's go to – there's one more call here. Let's go to 732, and then we'll go back to IMs, and then we'll wrap it up. 732, you're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm kind of surprised I got on the air, actually, today.
What's your name?
Yeah. Ryan from New Jersey.
Hey, man.
What's up? I just wanted to run through there's a subscription on YouTube, a channel called Townsquare, where let me think for a minute here for a second. The former labor secretary under the Clinton administration.
Which, Robert Reich?
Yeah, Robert Reich. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit nervous.
No, go ahead. No worries. Yeah.
He had like a two-minute discussion about about the sequester, because I know that Sam's been really big on the sequester on the show. And I just wanted to give his progressive advice for a real second before the show ends.
Cool. Go ahead.
You know, he said that Sam was saying on the show, the budget deficit isn't the big issue. The deficit is only 5% of GDP, which is the same as when Bill Clinton originally took office. The big issue is high unemployment, lowering wages, and heightened inequality. And it's about to become worse with the sequester going into action. So he wants the president to push to repeal the sequester by offering a reconciliation to the Senate. bill by which the budget bill can be passed by a simple majority and are not subject to a filibuster. And that pushes, you know, like pressure on the House to have to push, you know, to have more votes in order to actually keep the sequester going. And his plan is just to replace the sequester with what he calls a Build America's Future Act. So you close tax loopholes specifically for the rich, unlike, you know, tax, you know, Mitt Romney's plan, which, you know, would close loopholes for the
rich. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To end corporate welfare and then have a tax financial transaction at 0.1%, and then cut military spending.
Yeah, I mean, this all, you know, sounds great, and I'm really familiar with Robert Reich, and thanks, you know, for bringing it up. I think that this is just another thing where, you know, it's important to keep pushing these ideas and bringing them to the table, because ultimately some of these policies are going to need to be implemented to take care of the issues that you're raising. I think on the other hand, you know, there are two things here. One is that, you know, being realistic about where President Obama's at. I kind of joked earlier that I'm sort of the Obama bot around here, which obviously isn't to say that I mean, part of it is I just have sincere disagreements with President Obama. I think President Obama, you know, I think he's a centrist, if we want to use the term like that. He's slightly center left in some ways. And I think that he does kind of think in these sort of grand bargain cut and investment terms, which I just don't think is the right policy to pursue right now. So I don't think he'll pursue that strategy. And then, you know, I think the third thing is even questioning why, you know, a guy like Robert Reich is always a pretty liberal guy, but he was never, I mean, you know, he left the Clinton administration over differences with the Clinton administration, but he's a mainstream progressive. And none of the ideas that you just mentioned and articulated so well should be like out there or left wing or unexpected ideas. They're all very logical and rational responses to dealing with what we're dealing with. And, you know, so I think it's important, obviously, we just kind of keep pushing the ball forward. And I think, you know, I do think these ideas will actually gain more currency as time goes on, because the alternatives are not working out so well. But thanks for the call, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, let's get back to these IMs. C. McDonald, Michael, I bet you can do a wicked good impression of Sam. Any chance of hearing it? Great job, guys. Lots of fun to listen to. Think you can do a
here's
a
the deal,
impression?
Folks. No, I can't. I don't know.
I know what you can do, though. Can do a George Bush that I think rivals Sam Cedar's George Bush.
That's
why don't you give us that?
What the context would be, George Bush. What I don't know what I could do, like him congratulating Sam on his new baby.
Just do something.
She's like, hey, Sam, I'd like to congratulate you on producing another liberal Jew New Yorker. But I do have to
that's
say
pretty
that
good.
Michael,
that was all
right. Michael Brooks does a better impression of me than you do.
Maybe off the air you do. I don't know what happened here. But
I just got to stick with my Obama.
Bush and Cheney, there's a lot here, so I'll just get to this last one you sent me. Obama is center left. Bah-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. You just disqualified yourself. Next.
Ooh, I can't believe I've just disqualified. But he liked some. I thought he liked my drone interview I did a couple weeks ago on RT.
Bush and Cheney is
a
very
fickle
picky
guy.
Bush and Cheney is kind of like Rand Paul, right on some issues, completely wrong on others.
Yes, yes.
Doesn't mean Bush and Cheney is a hero though.
No, it does not mean Bush and Cheney is a hero.
Left Coast Marcus, Rand Paul is just a fundraising. He probably raised $1 million yesterday. I think he did raise a lot. I don't know about $1 million, but he definitely raised a lot of money yesterday. Jay Tingle, come to think of it, maybe Jermo can host a Drive Time show. I would be down for a Jermo podcast. I'm
totally
sure Jermo is squealing with glee right now.
And thank you, Jay, for one person being conspicuously missing from this whole, like, everybody gets a Drive Time show except for me, apparently. Thanks. It's great. Yeah.
Triangle Bill, good job, guys. Great session with Cliffy and great session with Matthew Film Guy. I don't actually get any of those channels, but you made it very entertaining to talk about characters and storylines. Have either of you ever seen the Oliver Stone recent miniseries on HBO, The Untold History of the U.S.? I have not. If it's not on streaming, I don't get HBO, so it's hard for me to –
I don't think it's on HBO. I don't remember what channel. I haven't seen either, but it's not on HBO. It's on, like, Cinemax or something.
Let's get to the next I am. Bartleby, great job. I like how I said that, just like
that,
Sam usually
that
does.
That was a dynamite, Sam.
Good job, guys. You're gradually working out the kinks. Sorry, Matt. While I'm a Walking Dead fan, it is far from the greatest thing on TV. I completely understand. I would reserve that title for something like Breaking Bad or Mad Men. I do enjoy Breaking Bad. Mad Men, I never really got
also
into.
Also wrong. The Wire is the best television show ever made. That's just objective fact here.
Well, Breaking Bad's really
sometimes
good.
We just need to be real about things.
Okay. In terms of
it's
things
like
you might cover.
Like global warming science.
In terms of things you might cover in upcoming shows, I wonder if you're familiar with the recent Boston Phoenix story on trials and tribulations of African-American conservative Nadia Nafi.
I read that last night. It's one of the most disturbing, weird, like along with the Zerlina Maxwell harassment on Twitter, I was in like a very Cliff Schechter state of mind last night. It's a really disturbing article.
I'm not familiar with it.
This girl was sexually harassed.
Well, let's talk
O'Keefe.
About it after
we'll
the show, and
we'll
cover it.
Yeah.
We'll cover it next week or something. Yeah. Let's see. Let's go to the next IMs here. Just trying to get through them, seeing what we've already done. John Miles 27, loving the mustard plug. That's what the Majority Report needs, is more ska punk. All this talk of great, thank you, by the way, all this talk of great TV shows and no mention of Mad Men, most highbrow, well-written show on TV for my money. I just could never really get into it.
I think the thing with Mad Men was I watched the first season and I felt like it was done. It was like, I got some of the context in the background and I just don't. It's like I get that, you know, that's probably what's, you know, Grand Central was like in 1962. And how long can that be interesting for?
Hi, Johnny. Hey, Matt and Mike. Just wanted to let you guys know you are doing a great job, and I wish you guys co-hosted the show more. By the way,
Thanks.
Since Sam isn't here, can you please send me a free Majority Report mug? No one has to know. I don't even think we have any more mugs.
We literally don't have
we
mugs.
We literally
He's
don't.
He's not lying.
Yeah. I don't even have one.
I don't have one. A mug.
And you guys mentioned waiting a whole week to watch a new episode of a show. I remember waiting a whole year just for a movie to come out on VHS. I'm actually not that young. I remember that as well.
Wow.
Do you remember that? I mean,
I wasn't allowed to watch TV. No, I'm just kidding. I remember.
That's a story for another day. 1780614. Geez, that was. I'm certainly no Rand Paulite, but the fact that he's a self-serving, finger-to-the-wind politician is not at all that shocking. Obama put forth the same "let the states decide" argument for gay marriage until the demographics pushed him towards supporting it. And while Paul's support of things like legalizing pot might be self-interested or branding, at least he's not supporting the current policies of raiding dispensaries. I agree with that. I mean, I do. Hopes fell. This is a lot here. Jeez. Let me.
Matt's just trying to say in response.
Please post the lyrics of La Poupée. No, 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 no. And Jay Tiggle may want to repeat. The good jobs numbers is 246,000 is accurate, means at rate of fewer than 3 million per year, more than 6 years to pick up the 17 million unemployed and underemployed, not to mention the new people turning age 18 or graduating college each year. And last year we had good January and February numbers, only to drop to slow, anemic growth. Growth in jobs is better than George W. Bush's jobs loss. I'm just hoping the job figures pick up to half a million each month to even get close to the Clinton 1998 level growth rates. Maybe I can get a job.
You don't have a job and you know all this stuff? That's ludicrous. Hofeld is a very smart dude.
He is very
smart.
He
tweets at us a lot. He's a very bright
Dradman Thieves, awesome show, guys. Michael is effing funny and you guys both deserve a raise. Hear that, Sam Cedar?
Yes.
Hear that, Sam
yes.
Cedar?
Thanks,
a raise.
Bro.
I want my raise.
I want a raise.
I highly doubt that's happening anytime soon.
No, not with free, this kid coming along. So
become
a member.
Yeah, well,
you can make that happen.
Well, the people listening right now are members.
Oh, I know. I keep saying
Freeloaders
sorry,
should give
guys.
You a bonus if they want the better half. Indeed.
Word.
PhD Chemist. Two great interviews. Keep up the good work. I'd be happy with just you guys until Sam returns. A little constructive criticism, though. Sometimes, Matt, you're a little too close to the mic. Okay, I hear you. You also have to remember Michael's behind the board, which is sure thing for failure.
Yeah, when I'm behind the board, pretty much, I don't know what
when
that's
Sam sounds good, that's mainly because – I mean, when Michael sounds good, it's mainly because I'm behind the – I'm talking about levels-wise.
Oh, levels-wise. I see what you mean.
David Hill, Matt and Michael, you are fantastic. Keep it up. Why, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Sham Ustio, refuting libertarians are slightly different than antagonizing them. They are estimated at only 7% of registered Republicans, but they are the fastest growing, youngest, and most internet connected. Along with liberals and anarchists, they are among the largest ideological groups in Anonymous worldwide. There's a reason the PDS show won the Streamies for News and hosted the Gary Johnson debate. Their ideas are flawed, but their message spreads fast and must be combated calmly. Pluger, practice makes better. I had to chuckle at your stumbling over the phrase. Working with my nephew on various skills made me quickly understand the ridiculousness of the original quote, and I eventually settled on the above modification. And thanks, guys, for keeping the ship afloat in Sam's absence. Pay no heed to those likening the ship to a carnival cruise. Bush and Chains, you're calling me a libertarian? Grr. I'm a real progressive. It's not surprising the Bloombergian monarchical peons don't recognize one when they see one. Good job taking over for Sam for the last couple of days. Look forward to pissing you off on Twitter on occasion in the future. Well, thank you, Bush and Chains. I kind of feel bad for saying this after that compliment, but if you have to say you're a real progressive, you might not be a real progressive.
Ooh. I think Bush and Chains is a libertarian. I'm just knocking him like he knocks us. I would insult him with a lot of stuff, but I would never stoop so low as to call Bush and Chains a libertarian, ever.
I'm looking here for the...
Actually, you know what, Bush and Chains? I was arguing about Bloomberg with a Wall Street Journal reporter who is a very good acquaintance of mine, and I was... She thought I was pretty unfairly hostile to Bloomberg. So just FYI.
Jay Tingle, Bush and Chains is progressive in the – hold on. I just lost it. Give me a second here. Bush and Chains is progressive in the William Jennings Bryan mold. John Miles 27, Mad Men is just getting started in the first season. It's a totally different show now than when they're in the late 60s instead of the early 60s, just like the country is becoming a totally different country.
All right, so they end up dropping acid and listening to the Beatles. I know. I'm sure that happens. I don't know. I'm sure it's a great show. It's just I don't have patience for it.
All right, I've got to get to the last IM of the day
yes.
here. Looking for – I just had one and I lost it. Give me a second here.
Actually, you know, a friend of mine – that I did comedy with back in the day when I did comedy, actually, like stand-up and sketch stuff, like around college age. He's out in Hollywood now, and he does a lot of ads and commercials and everything, and he had a little role on on Mad Men.
Oh, really?
A couple of seasons ago, yeah.
Where's this? I just had a
last – I didn't watch it.
I had a great last IM of the day, and I lost it.
That was, by the way, a very miniature version of Celebrity Name Drop Friday. I have a friend who I'm sure you've never heard of, but possibly have seen in a Samsung ad, who was on Mad Men for a second.
Our Name Drop Friday isn't that good because we don't know all these celebrities like Sam does.
Also, yeah.
Oh, 100, blah, 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 lots of numbers here. What does Matt think of the show Supernatural? I don't watch that show, actually. I've never seen it.
I've never heard of Supernatural.
The Following is a good show I just started watching with Kevin Bacon. I think that's an interesting show.
Is that really the final IM of the day?
I don't want it to be, but I just saw it, so I thought I would. Maybe end with Bush and Chains. Let's end with Bush and Chains. Okay. In the final IM of the day, good on ya, creating some heat with a hot female reporter. My girlfriend likes big words. That's what got her.
is hilarious.
What a great final end
of
the day.
That is really the best.
On International Women's Day of all days.
International. You know what, Bush and Chains, you might need to work on the progressive element of that.
Yes.
All right, folks, have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you for putting up with us these past 2 days. You might have to put up with us. I think you will, actually, a bit more.
Putting up with us a little bit more.
All right. Let's end the show here.
All right. Have a great day, folks.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie fall. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice was made.
the option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the